I'm a sports fan, thanks to my dad. At various times in my life, I have been an avid fan of the LA Lakers, the Chicago Cubs, the Atlanta Braves, the Portland Trailblazers, the Kansas City Royals, and most currently, the Seattle Seahawks, and especially the Kansas City Chiefs. Like most sports fans, I can get very worked up rooting for my team. And when they win, I'm jubilant. And when they lose, I feel it. So last February, when the Kansas City Chiefs suffered a crushing loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl, I was so upset afterwards, I couldn't even talk about it. But then I remembered something. My friend Jess Downey had texted me, just as one of my texting buddies. I have my texting buddies during football games. They include Jess, Anna Michael, Tony Porton, and my son Ben, and Richard if he's out of town. In 2018, Jess Downey texted me a message right after the Kansas City Chiefs had lost the game that they needed to win in order to get into the Super Bowl. So basically, they blew it and their season was over. And I was feeling very down, and Jess texted me two words: next year, and an exclamation point. And immediately I felt better, right? And I learned from that experience two valuable lessons, not only for sports, but for life in general. And the first one is that the faster we let go of our attachment to what could have or should have been, the less we suffer. And the second lesson is, the way to let go of that attachment to what could have or should have been or what should be is to shift our perspective, right? To broaden our view. We might also say to shift our consciousness. But it really is like taking a bigger picture view. It's kind of like opening up the lens of a camera. And the tight-in view is, we lost the Super Bowl. The bigger view, there's always next year. You see, the key is to remember the bigger picture. This is not easy to do, especially when you're in the thick of something and when you're holding on tight to something. There is an art to non-attachment. You see, on the one thing, we want to be attached to some things. We want to be attached to our purpose. We want to be attached to our family and friends, to our spiritual community, to the values that give our lives meaning. But at the same time, we must be non-attached. Non-attached. We must be able to let go. Why? Because circumstances are constantly changing, because we don't always have things turn out the way we would like, or the way we had planned, or the way we would wish. We're not always right, we don't always win, and life just keeps flowing along. Life is a flow, and we must flow with it. You see, any time we start clinging to an attachment, whatever it may be, whenever we start clinging, we basically block the flow of good into our own lives. And so to get back in the flow, we must release. We must unattach. Now, non-attachment is not the same as detachment. So detachment really implies a certain aloofness, right? A certain sort of disengagement. We think of somebody who is not engaged in this way of being not really caring, not really being compassionate. They are detached. But non-attachment is very different. Non-attachment says that we can care very deeply. We can be very connected to people and situations in our lives, and at the same time, be able to let them go when we need to. How do we know when it's time? How do we know when we need to let go of something? Very simple. When holding on to it is causing us pain. So I learned a big lesson about this in 2008 from, of all people, Deepak Chopra. Does everyone know who Deepak Chopra is? Great, I wasn't sure about you young folks over here. It's kind of a big name in the spiritual circles. Well, in 2008, I initiated and directed a project in which we were filming a Unity minister. Her name is Reverend Wendy Craig Purcell. She's the founding minister of the Unity Center in San Diego. We were going to film her interviewing Deepak Chopra for a six-part series on topics such as God and Jesus, spiritual principles, and higher consciousness. It was very exciting. I was super excited about this, so I got all the parties to sign off on it. And Deepak said, I'm in for whatever you want to do. Great. I worked with Reverend Wendy for weeks, planning what the format would be, what the segments would be, what questions she would ask Deepak, etc. She did a ton of research and preparation. Great. Finally, the time comes. We all go to San Diego. Deepak arrives, and he says to me, I think we should change the name of the program. Okay. We hadn't really set the name of the program. I can't remember what name we had, but it wasn't cast in stone or anything. We talked it through. We came up with the name Jesus and the Awakening to God Consciousness. It's a DVD series. You can get it on Amazon. In any event, I really liked this title. That was great. But then Deepak pulled out of his pocket several pages of notes. And he said, so here are my thoughts on what the format for this can be. And here are the segments. Here's how we can divide it up. And these are some questions I thought Wendy could ask me. Well, this was about an hour and a half before we began filming, and so I began to feel a sense of rising panic. First of all, I was already starstruck, okay, because I mean, this is Deepak Chopra. I was a little nervous anyway, and now he was wanting to change everything at the last minute. So I went off to Reverend Wendy, and I go, my gosh, what do we do? We talked it over, and of course, she had worked very hard to be ready. We decided I would just go back to him and say, you know what, it's really too late to make any changes. So, I did. So I went back to him, and I said that. And then, to my great relief and my continuing edification, he said without a millisecond of hesitation, okay, and put all of his notes away. And on we went. I was incredulous. I had never seen anyone turn on a dime like that before. To completely let go of, obviously put a lot of work and thought into it, to just completely let go of those attachments in order to clear the way for us to have an easy and harmonious process. And we did. We went on, we produced a great series, very uplifting and very successful. So what I realized from that is, yes, he's a spiritual guru, master kind of up here, but we all have that capability in us. We all have the capability to let go of something just that easily. Say, I'm done with this. I'm letting it go. And drop it. We all have that ability to, instead of resisting something, to instead of arguing with what is and trying to pretend that this isn't the reality, that we actually accept what is. So instead of saying, oh, not this, something else, not this, why this? Instead of going through all those imaginations, we just say, ah, now this. Now what? Now what? So we can go on. You know, COVID has given us many opportunities to practice non-attachment, hasn't it? More opportunities than we ever wanted. In 2020 especially, we had to let go of so much. It's kind of mind-boggling now that we think about it, isn't it? All that we let go of in 2020, there were simple freedoms, simple things we were accustomed to, like being able to walk around without wearing a mask, like being able to be with our family and friends whenever we wanted, being able to hug each other. We had to let go of these plans and events and activities and gatherings we had our hearts set on, as one after another were canceled or postponed. We got through it. And for those of us working on our spiritual practices during that time, we may not even realize how we got through it, because at least in part, we shifted our consciousness, right? we looked at, we sought to see things differently. We realized that, yes, we had lost so much, but there was still so much to be grateful for. We were grateful for love, for connection, for nature, for God, for each other. Turned our attention to the things that can never be taken away from us. And we also elevated our consciousness by reminding ourselves of the truest words ever spoken. This too shall pass. This too shall pass. Say it with me. This too shall pass. Yes. Absolutely true. Everything comes and goes. Everything arises and passes. It is the flow of life, the ever-changing flow of life. You know, this is a central concept in Buddhism. How many of you are familiar with Buddhism? It's very central to Buddhism. It is said that that Siddhartha Gautama actually became the Buddha when he realized that people suffered when they insisted on permanent, unchanging states of being in an ever-changing world. Oh, how we cling. Is it not true? We don't want to let go of how it once was or how we thought it was going to be. And in Buddhism, they're very focused on this particular understanding. They emphasize the importance of knowing that everything in our lives, everything is fleeting and transitory. And you could say, well, that's kind of a depressing thought, isn't it? Like, right, it's all going to come and it's all going to go. Not so. You know, knowing that it's only here for a time can actually deepen our connection with it. We learn to live in the now. We learn to appreciate the magnificence of what is present in our lives today. And in Buddhism, they say to do all of this, to enjoy your connections, to enjoy your life, your accomplishments, your possessions, your friends, your family, enjoy all of it, but at the same time, hold that remembering that all is impermanent. And in doing so, knowing this, we can live without fearing loss, they say. We can live without experiencing the pain and the longing that come from wanting what has been. So one of the most powerful demonstrations of these Buddhist concepts, this idea of staying in the flow, of being willing to connect deeply and then let go, is the creation of sand mandalas by Tibetan Buddhist monks. Has anyone ever seen sand mandalas by Tibetan Buddhist monks? These groups of monks, I'm not quite ready for that one yet, these groups of monks go around the world, and they go into different spiritual communities. Richard and I saw them at Unity Temple on the Plaza in Kansas City. And they go in and they create these gorgeous sacred mandalas. Now, mandala simply means circle. It's a Sanskrit word for circle. Now I'm ready. So the monks use a variety of colored grains of sand to create a graphic and a symbolic pattern in a circle. It takes millions of grains of sand to make a mandala that's about the size of this one, 5 feet by 5 feet square. The monks bend over like that. You can see them working there for hours on end, dropping grain after grain of sand into these very precise and complex patterns. It is said that they trained for years in order to be able to do this. And I think part of that training must be back exercises. You gotta strengthen your back, and you gotta you gotta make a commitment to never say it loud, "Oh, my aching back." But here's how it looks when they're actually doing this work. They work in silence, they're bent over, and they're gently scraping these small metal tubes and funnels to apply the sand. It's laborious, methodical, precise, and stunning. Each mandala can take up to 5 days to complete, working all throughout the day. But the most important message from this exercise comes when the mandala is completed. Because when the monks are finished, they pray over the mandala, and then they destroy it. They sweep up all the sand. They give handfuls of it to people who come to the closing ceremony as sort of a remembrance. They take the rest of the colored sand and they put it into an urn, and then they take it to the nearest living stream, flowing water, where they gently pour it in, symbolizing impermanence and letting go. They release the sand into the great flow of life to bless the whole world. What an incredible metaphor for life, is it not? To pour everything into it, these actions, these experiences of exquisite beauty, but also to know that all is impermanent and to be willing to release. It's a reminder to deeply savor now, to appreciate life, knowing that it is ephemeral. You know, we need this kind of perspective, this higher consciousness, particularly when we are faced with the hardest letting go of all, letting go of the people we love. And perhaps they've just moved on and living elsewhere, or relationship has ended. Maybe we don't connect with them going forward in this life, or perhaps they are nearing the end of their earthly life. Or maybe they have completed their earthly journey and made their transition. It can be excruciatingly difficult to let go of people we love. When my mother was in hospice, my sister was determined to keep her alive at all costs. She said to the hospice nurse, "Please just continue to feed Mom. Just force it in her if you have to. Don't let her sleep too much. Keep giving her positive messages. Keep telling her she's going to be okay." Well, we've all experienced probably that kind of desperation at some point in our lives, when we so fervently wanted to stop what was obviously happening. But what helped us, my sister and me, be willing and able to let go was a bigger perspective. Was the realization that my mother was ready to go, that the kind and loving thing to do was to let her go. A hospice nurse said to me, "You know, quite often our loved ones are being called up. They're being called up by spirit, and we are holding on to them by the ankles, trying to keep them here." You see, it's that bigger perspective that can help us let go. And certainly if we're facing the loss of a loved one, we can remind ourselves that life goes on, as we teach in Unity, beyond these physical bodies, that we're always connected, whether on the physical plane or not, and that, yes, we will meet again. You see, this spiritual perspective, and that's what it is, can help us in the day-to-day realities to release. This is spiritual work, spiritual practice of the highest order. It is the most toughest spiritual work that we do. And when you think about it, it's why prayer is so important. You know, what is prayer other than shifting our consciousness? Is it not true? We go to God, and whatever understanding we have of God, we release our concerns, we open ourselves to insights so that we can see things differently. To let go, we can amp up our prayer practice, our meditation. We can consult spiritual wisdom wherever we find it. We can also lean on the spiritual masters. We can lean, for example, on Jesus. I know that works for many, not for all. Find the one that works for you. But let me share this one passage. In Matthew chapter 11, verses 18 through 20, Jesus says, "Come to me," you know this, "come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." What a sense of relief and solace that is when we're trying to release something. And that passage, that particular passage, is beautifully interpreted in a Bible translation you may have never heard of, but it's called The Message. And here's how it interprets it. Matthew 11, chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. "Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? come to me. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. And this, keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Isn't that what we are most after? Living freely and lightly. When we are carrying too much and holding on too tight, we can make a conscious choice to let go. Here are some steps that we can take. Whether we're holding on to a person, a habit, a grudge, a possession, a point of view, or something else. And the first thing, recognize that your continuing attachment is causing you to suffer. This is so big. Look, when my team loses, there's a sting. But when I keep going it over and over, I'm inflicting my own suffering. Same for anything you're remaining attached to that you need to let go of. Second, seek a broader perspective. Connect with God, Jesus, a source of sacred wisdom, to help you get out of your limited tunnel thinking into the bigger picture. Third, create and repeat an affirmation to help you practice non-attachment. Here are a few. I let go and let God. I accept every outcome as a path that leads me closer to God. I commit to loving unconditionally, non-judgmentally, and without attachment. Wow. Unconditionally, non-judgmentally, and without attachment. And finally, deepen your spiritual practice. Pray, meditate, practice gratitude. Find sanctuary in the presence of God within you. And know that while all else may come and go, this presence of God within you, this presence of love, never leaves you. That never goes. It's the essence of who you are. Lo, I am with you. Let's turn now to our meditation. I want you to get comfortable in your seat. Take a deep breath in, releasing and letting go, appreciating for a moment that this is the mastery of non-attachment, to breathe in and to let go. Allow yourself to relax into this present moment. Breathe into any place of tension within you and feel it release. Let go. Let go of whatever you are holding on to, and whatever is holding on to you. Imagine for a moment that this is your day of liberation. This is your day to put aside whatever has been weighing you down and be free. I invite you in just a few moments of silence to call into your own mind and heart whatever you most fervently want to release and let go of. And in a moment of silence, imagine just pure release and letting go. See it go by the wayside. See it out of you and out of your life, and you at peace. In the silence. give thanks for this great power within us, this divine power to choose what we hold on to and what we let go of, to truly create the path of our own lives, to live in ever greater joy and freedom. We step into that power fully today and see only good things coming forward. And for all of this, we are so grateful. Thank you, God. And so it is. Amen.
Expression of your